My earliest trauma memory is ironically in Secresh. And the worst part is when I did speak up, it divided my family. So I think the day I decided to stop weed and stop alcohol was when I knew I'm fighting again and I'm gonna give it one more shot. I was doing loans, and that's when I then started building myself up.
Genies, before we jump into this episode, I just want to take a moment and say thank you to all of you who have joined this growing community. Our channel now has over 100,000 views, and it's all because of you. Your support means the world to me, and each week we continue to grow because of you. Every subscription, every comment, every like ensures that this podcast becomes bigger, and the bigger it becomes, it means we bring you even bigger guests. We're now on the road to 10,000 subscribers. Please help us get there. If you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? Welcome back to Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship. Today's guest has a deep story to share from a turbulent upbringing, sexual abuse, business failure, to now running her own management company. If you've gone through a tough time in your life and you're looking for a way to pick yourself up, this episode is for you. And if you're someone who wants to just learn from failure and how to use that to grow yourself, this conversation is for you. And if you're just looking for somebody to inspire you to start your own company from scratch and build it up and manage talent, this conversation for you. Today, I'm joined by Mathabo Mbele. She is a radio host and producer turned entrepreneur. She's the founder of Media Guru, a talent management agency that works with amazing stars such as Blood and Water star Kosing Ngema and TikToker, dancer, and musician Hope Ramafalo. Thank you so much for joining us, Mathabo.
It's only a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. That was a grand introduction.
Because you've done so much, but on top of doing so much in your life, you've also been through a lot. But when I look at you and look at how much your business has grown, how much you carry yourself, and how you're just full of joy, I'm so inspired. And people might not know this about you. You've been experiencing a trauma in your life from when you were pretty, pretty young. Can you take me back to your earliest moment of experiencing trauma?
My earliest trauma memory is ironically in Secresh. My abuser, I don't want to claim him, the predator who was in my life at that time, used to take me to a creche, you know? And I'm obviously under the age of 4, right? And so I've never known a life without trauma. I've never had an experience where things are okay, things are smooth. It's just always been something is about to go down, right? So yeah, just to answer that question quickly, I think I was about 3 years old. That's like my earliest memory. And with the research that I've done, things actually happened at a much younger age to me. But I can only remember from, you know, sangene
crash. Yeah. What are those things that were happening to you from even that young age?
So unfortunately for me, and like most of us, teenage mom, you know, and she was 16 when she had my brother and 19 when she had me. And, you know, by the time you're 20, only now you want to live your life and. So she'd leave us with our dad. I don't know if it was out of spite, you know, if you're an irresponsible father, you know. So my mom would leave for whatever reason. Maybe she went hustling, maybe she went grooving, whatever. And then my dad would leave, right? And unfortunately, yet again, for me, I had this predator in the family who was aware of our family dynamics, that my parents are, you know, quite volatile in their relationship. And I think now that I know, that predators always want a victimized child. You know what I mean? If you're already in an unhealthy family. So I became prey to this guy because he was part of the family. And I mean, he would finger me at a young age. He would make me, you know, suck, you know. I mean, it was so bad that my bladder actually collapsed. And I was bedwetting until I was like 16. And that was something I had to just carry with me. And I think that's where my confidence came. Because, you know, you know that thing, was cooler. We'd always used to tease each other. And I was that girl who was always teasing, you know? And I was okay with it because I knew, Uguti, it's not my fault. Something is wrong. And yeah, essentially, you know, from way before I could even remember, already things were not okay, you know. So it got so bad that one day I was watching, there's an old series, now I'm going to expose my age, called Vicious Cycle. That was the theme song. And one of the kids in that home, it was a story about a, you know, children's home, was sexually abused and she had to speak. So that's when I broke down. I was like, oh, okay, so this is wrong. This is not supposed to be happening. But now this is Matabo, the 9-year-old. So from the ages of maybe, let's say, 6, 9 months, who knows, all the way until 9, I was in this guy's space. He would buy me clothes, and I didn't know then, but he was conditioning me to see him as a hero, because most of my parents are out there doing their things. So if he comes with a t-shirt, then it's like uyangithenga, or almost silencing me, right? So yeah, that's the rocky start I started from. And it didn't help that my parents were quite physical also. My dad was a karate sensei, and my mom was an angry black woman. So those two was just like big, like combustion, you know, when they're together. I mean, the most traumatic story or memory that I have that does not necessarily include my body being violated is the day my mom was axed on her head by my father. And I mean, I've always been a big baby, you know? And my mom had to carry me for a good 6-7 kilometers to the nearest police station. She was smart enough not to pull out the axe. Because had she pulled out the axe, who knows what would have happened at that time, you know? So yeah, for me, just that walk, she was weak. And Angazi, if you've seen this, but blood reacts like a candle wax. So if you've got blood going down your head, for instance, it builds up. So I kept on touching it. So I kept on feeling, and it just became more and more, and then it congealed, like, you know what I mean? And as soon as she got to Habedi Police Station, which is the local police station where I'm from, she told them what her name was. She wrote down her name, her ID number, my father's name, and who did this to her, and her parents' address. And then, boom, she fell down. And that, for me, was like the first time I realized that, damn, this woman is strong. Like, she conditioned her brain. Do you understand? Which, you are not going to fail me. We are going to walk. Oh, I'm crying. Shucks. Yeah. She conditioned herself. Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
That I'm not going to fall a minute earlier until I get to the police station. So they know who did this to me.
Yeah.
They know where to take my child should anything happen to me. Right. So for me, it was a very rocky start. And I knew then that my mom was like a hero. Mm. Yeah, I knew then that she's a hero and there's no way I could be weak. And by that, guys, please don't be alarmed by my tears. I'm such a baby. But yeah, it was truly that part. Like the first 5 years of my life, if I could, I probably would just like redo it. Just so I could hug that little girl and make her feel safe in her own body, make her feel safe in her own family, in her own community, in her own country. Because that Matabo feels so let down by everyone. And the worst part is when I did speak up, it divided my family. Till today, my paternal family sees me for nothing. I could be the president of this country. But because I spoke out, I was blackballed in my family. I could be the most influential, impactful, life-changing human being in my family, in my paternal family. They just see me as an attention-seeking child. And I said, who would want to lie about such? Ukuthi bengisifebe somuntu at the age of 3. Why would I lie? Why? Why would ngikhamela ingubo? How is that an act? And how good or am I of an actress that I would, thank you, baby. Oh, mina ngiyakhala, you see, this is another part of my life. I cry and I wipe my own tears, move on. I just don't want to ruin my face. So yeah, man, that's just like, you know, a synopsis of this traumatic start into life. Yeah. And the messed up part is that psychology says the first 7 years of someone's life is where their perception and, you know, worldly view starts. And to have had mine start like that, I was like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way, you know?
Yeah. And you talk about how this divided your family heavily. I know that it even broke your relationship with your father,
yeah.
That incident with your mom and many incidents thereafter. And you didn't speak to him for 25 years because that relationship just became heavily fractured. How else did all of this impact your relationship specifically with your dad?
Let me start with men. Of friends. I'm terrible at relationships. I mean, I've dated, listen, and I only date A-list. You know, I would, you know, find like good, financially stable, you know, but it won't last because anginayo lembewo edingekayo to be someone's wife. If anything, I don't want to use the word hate because then that would make me an aggressive black woman. But I've got no space for men. You know, I've got no tolerance for men. All I see in men is red flags. And I do disrespect men a lot, especially if like we're in a romantic space. Like once you do something wrong, I am onto you, you know what I mean? And then it all comes out, you know? And which is basically the same thing that happens with the relationship with my father. Because the reason I stayed away from my dad for 25 years is he refused to take accountability for the level of trauma that he exposed me to. I'm not blaming him. I don't want him to be responsible, but I expect him to be accountable, to understand that I failed my daughter when she could not even protect herself. You see, now I could never blame my dad for nothing. I'm a grown woman. But Matabo, the 3-year-old, Matabo, the 9-year-old, needed her father. And he never wanted to take accountability. And I hold people accountable. I mean, my ex-boyfriend is a judge. He literally made a joke and laughed the other day. Said, "Nah, brah, you're in the wrong profession. You should come be a judge. Let me be the media practitioner, because you hold people in such high regard and you expect people to be accountable." And I said, that's why my life is the way it is. I don't want people who flip-flop. I don't want people who want to hide behind circumstances or who want to hide behind substance. "Oh, I was drunk. My friend, I'll slap you. Please, you did what you did in spite of whatever substance you had." So that is what created the big rift with my dad, because I'm such a communicator. I really am a communicator. So I approached my dad on numerous occasions. "Baba, arbuwe. Why no treat a mama so? Why no it's a mama so? Why no shapa mama? You are a whole sensei. You go to China because we are Cheyenne. Matkatu zo shayu mama. Endlini." And unfortunately, back in the, you know, in the, wait, 90s, in the 80s, it was considered sexy or cool. You know, but the level at which my dad did it at was too much. And the worst part is my mom was an adopted kid. So really my mom had no one. So you are now stuck with this man who you've got two babies with, and every second argument, because my mom was super hot. Yeah, shout out to my mom, Z. My mom was hot and sella. You have one who's like, "Oh, we are going on. I my mom, baby, she's a baba. Cheapy. I cheap. Bona. Dollar." So he was very insecure, you know? And with all of that, my dad just never wanted to take accountability. And I think his biggest fear was that I was blaming him, especially for the sexual abuse stuff. I just wanted him to say, "Tavos, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was not there. I'm sorry I didn't see the signs. I'm sorry you had to go through that." That's all I wanted to hear from my dad for a very long time. And, you know, when you don't get the sorries, you then self-soothe. And so for 25 years, I self-soothed. And with God's grace, I've always been ambitious. So by the time I was 19, I'm already on national TV. I'm already modeling. I'm already on radio. And then what does he do? Comes from the cracks. "That's my daughter." And you're just like, "No, you are not going to claim me." You know, but again, the child in me, the parent pleaser in me, went back and said, "Baba, let's sit down." And then the problem becomes when dad has a new woman, a new wife, and now your home is truly no longer your home. It's just a house you can use as an address. But the biggest rift with my dad and I was just the inability to be accountable as a parent, to say, "You know what? Yeah, I let you guys down." You know, because I do have an older brother. Mm-hmm. And him and I actually had a sympathy trauma bond. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now when I used to pee on myself, he would do number two on himself. And I mean, why is an eight-year-old doing a number two on himself? This child is traumatized. This child saw his mom be beat down every day. And my brother was one, he's an avoidant kind of attachment style. So he would see them, bakalugula, and he would just sleep. Mina, what do I do? I go in. There was a day I even poured my mom with hot water by accident, because I wanted to burn my dad. But you know, in the fight, you know what I mean? So my chat has always been around, just be accountable, Baba. Say you're sorry. Make me believe you love me. Because then that created the, "I'm crying again." That created the unlovable thought. If my own father couldn't love me, who would love me, you know? Yeah. And fortunately for me, I learned to love myself. And that's why I'm saying self-soothing then comes from like long periods of neglect. So I learned to be my own friend. You know, scrapbooking was a thing when we were growing up. So I'd scrapbook a lot. I'd write songs about how I want to grow up because I figured growing up must be so dope if being a child is so terrible, you know? And I guess for me, the biggest issue with the relationship with my dad and how it came to be strained for this long is that he just refused to hear me and see me and support me the way I needed it. You know, because then we know we must open the door for you. Or mawulimele uchuka, we know ukuthi we must help you. But mawulimele ngaphakathi, ulimele engqondweni, no one can help you, not even those who claim to love you. And for me, that's how I stayed away from that. And the worst part, I mean, there's so many worst parts at this point, was him assuming ukuthi when he dies, then we'll inherit a house from him. And I was like, I'm not that kind of a child. I don't want your inheritance. I just want your support. Ask me who I'm dating. Ask me what I'm doing. You know, for a media practitioner, our parents don't know what we're doing. Yeah, I see you on TV, but I heard you on radio. And I'm like, yeah, engage me. Ask me questions. But because his wife had other children that she came with from her previous marriage, then those children became the priority. They were taken to college. I wasn't. Even Namanj, like as soon as, I mean, as recent as last week, my dad made a joke about me. I was a butt of the joke to his wife and the children. So I'm cool with my dad, but until they are in the building, then I'm a zero. You know? So namanje, it's not that I'm cool with my dad. It's just that now I'm older and I'm just like, this guy's suffering because there's no way you could be so oblivious to the damage you've done. You know, you abused my mom. You abused us. I'm now almost 40 and I'm still crying over daddy issues. So I'm just like, nah, bruh, I'll stay away from you. I'll give you your space. You're toxic. And I then learned Tugana. My brand has always been joy and just like being happy and being empathetic and compassionate. But when it comes to my dad, then I learned Tugana because I figured meling evoke something, you know, I understand. And that's always has now been his chat with no, but it didn't start there. I started doing that after I realized Guti, he's dense. This is a thick wall. And in order for me to get through to him, I must match his level of crazy,
yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, my dad would probably tell people, no, we are delele. And I'm like, yeah, velo genze kanjalo, baba, mtano kula ngana baba, we are delele velo.
And the fracturing of the relationship with your dad caused issues, like you mentioned, in relationships as 100%. Well. So much that you once even almost ended a man's life with your bare hands.
How do you know this, woman?
Listen, research.
Which hands? These hands? Girl, don't lie.
Yeah.
Ansela, when are we sitting here? Ansela, do you pay people to be in the streets?
We research.
I get
we wouldn't be doing our job if we don't research, would we?
I get happy. Oh, shucks. Yeah. It goes back to the very core of me feeling unsafe, even in my own body. And that incident was a weird one. Because I wasn't even fighting my battle. It wasn't like a romantic partner. Yeah, so he's a guy from Ikaslam, you know? And I had just inherited a house from my grandmother. So by default, I have to move away from the city and go home just to respect the gift and, you know, renovate and make it a home. And, you know, so now I'm home. And, hey, Anselmo, we know what Tlalo. This guy starts doing drugs, right? Police come. He burns down the house. He used to rape his grandmother. He's now stealing from his tenants. So he's just a nuisance, nje lapestratin said, right? Oh, me, I'm in my kitchen. I'm making breakfast for my dog and my sister. He's saying, as a lokshin game, I'm like, Vimba! I see a color, Vimba, Vimba! I tell my sister, I'm like, dog, deal with this. You know me. I moved from 0 to 100, which is why I refuse to be upset or annoyed or angry, because I know, now I know, ukuthi koninte khona, and the lento leyo is not me. It's all this pent up trauma and anger and unresolved issues. So this guy, long story short, he then bayambamba. Keep the TV when. Wa rape go kwakho wena. Hey, when no sila we. Yeah. All I had to hear was ware puko kwako. All I needed to hear is that he used to do that to his grandmother. And sala ngangene garage yam ngalande kharafu. Engamutupa umntana abantu ngamutupa ngamutupa. And it was not Mathabo anymore. It was like 30 years worth of, you understand? It got so bad. I mean, I don't want to expose too much. Now I'm set jail and cause I'm ning pesu kene. Because manga kulma too much ng zo jail. But I'm shy boy. So kuzwa mina ge manj. Cause then people can identify good. Oh, I salve the TV la. Says keeper. Lobabsu, you know? And it's only after that day that I knew I needed therapy. I've gone through everything, the loss of my mom, you know, even the way my mom passed on, my dad issues, you know, my childhood traumas. But that day, I knew, Isis, on your own, you can't do it. You need professional, you know, assistance to be able to regulate your emotions. Because what I identified from that incident is that I lose it. You know, most men actually say this, I just saw red. I didn't mean to kill him or her. That's what happened to me that day. And for the first time, because I'm quite introspective also, just like as an individual, because I'm super self-aware and stuff, I had to look at myself in the mirror and say, Ausi, that's what I call myself. I'm like, Ausi, now you've reached Park Station. You want to offload everything and start afresh.
Yeah.
So that incident actually also changed my life. Because the worst part is how I convinced myself, imagine, who says that? And I'm scared good vele uzongivulela case because I yo on site I went in hard, something I've never ever imagined I could do. So with that I learned to truly seek professional help and stop throwing hands.
Stop throwing it. And you know, those things also are very generational, right? Because your biological grandmother also had a history of violence herself. Please tell us a little bit more about that.
Dude, you know way too much. I need to know who's on your payroll, Ansela. Ansela, who's on your payroll?
Listen, journalists over here, we ask questions and get answers.
Okay. Like I did mention, my mom was adopted. Although it was a family adoption, she was adopted by her paternal aunt. So my biological grandmother was from Lesotho. Melili, may her soul rest in peace. So Melili was, you know, what we call a slay queen. Yeah, mzugwana. So she went out one night and this guy wanted to force himself on her, right? And my grandmother was like, nah, I'm not going down like that. And so she's like, no, relax. Relax, awa relax, guy. I'm cool. No, let me go down. Nevus. My God, two evus. Wait. At that nigga died. So my grandmother then became obviously most wanted in Lesotho. That's when she crossed over to South Africa. And that's how she met my biological grandfather, whom then had a child, which is my mom.
Yeah.
So you're right. A lot of these things we are dealing with are generational. Because the fact that my grandmother was about to be raped and her granddaughter gets raped. Do you understand what I mean? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because even with my mom, the fact that she was 16 when she gave birth to my dad, I mean to my brother, is a problem. Because it was still statutory rape. How is a 16-year-old giving birth? So it was my grandmother, then it was my mother, then it's me. So, to be quite fair and honest, somewhere, somehow, I am calling you this time, Nina Mang. I'm not crying. I do, like, console myself, which as in, maybe it's a good thing I don't have children, because then my children are gonna get into this nonsense until, or maybe if I can break these generational curses, because you don't know until you know, right? And it's a very sore point for me to be my age and not have biological children. But also the damage that was done in my reproductive system is so bad that I might just have to do in vitro or adopt even, because, you know, for that long, it really, really did mess me up. So sometimes I feel the generational curses are there, but you just need to identify them. And I think I have, and hopefully they'll end with me.
Yeah, they end with you. And, you know, you speak about your mother so beautifully, about, you know, the kind of woman she was and the love that she had. And I know the way in which she passed was also another traumatic experience for you. In the way in which she left you and left you so young. What did that do to you? Maybe if you can share a little bit as well on how she passed.
Yeah, Osman Tut. Yo, brah. Like, after everything she went through, she then got an opportunity to work for the NIA, which is like the South African equivalent to the CIA, secret society, you know. And we then relocated to Pretoria. And she started her job in November, and she passed 10 years later in November. The irony is, it was on the day she was being honored for 10 years service. And for me, I guess because it was a secret society, she couldn't really share a lot. But I recall my mom going away for long periods of time. Abu, yashile, awondile. You know, you're like, ah, mama, you were gone for 3 weeks and now you're so skinny and dark. What's going on? Like, so I'm sitting out, how mama? I'm sitting because when I was sitting go officing, like, So later I learned that my mom was actually in surveillance. And in surveillance, it's very dangerous. Your cover can get blown. You know, I remember sometimes my mom would be a maid in a premier's house or in a minister's house, should be an undercover, you know, spy, you know, just to, obviously for intel, whatever they were working on. And we were too young to get it, but she did warn us to say, guys, mama utshwana le lepodisa, consider me as, you know, a cop. I could go to work, get shot, and not come back. But we were too young. And because we had never lost anyone so close, we never grasped what that would do or what that means. And she actually passed on from a car accident. And my mom was one of those people, I laugh about it now because it's past, but she had not forgiven white people yet for what happened in the past. So for her to die in the hands of a white woman was just a joke. I'm like, there's no way. It could not have been a black nigga or anybody should have been driving that other car. So unfortunately, it was at a curve in Daveyton in the East Rand, and this truck had one eye, like in terms of lights, and whoever was driving, that lady was driving, overlapped into my mom's end, and it hit her directly, and she died on the spot. For me, I'm happy for her, because I would not have wanted her to suffer unnecessarily. You know, I've seen people who try to fight for someone's life. With my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, he had cancer, prostate cancer. Listen, just to help him. And the trauma and the financial part of the things that come with, you know, trying to fight for someone's life. So when I say I'm happy for my mom that she passed on the spot, she didn't have to deal with any of that, you know. But for me, the cruel thing about life is having to go to the car to get her ID and I find her foot. Yeah. I found my mom's foot in the car and I was like, yeah, it's official, you know? And this is my time with a 19-year-old. I'm literally on top of the world. I mean, I'm on SABC One, I'm on, you know, national radio. And for that to happen, to say I died in that moment is an understatement. I died a million deaths. The only fortunate part is that with my SABC gig money, I was able to buy her a Michelle Hebelin watch. Because apparently Michelle Hebelin ke level for mathaba hole, you know? So when I got paid, I asked her, Mama, what do you want? She's like, I was KFC. I'm like, no, man, think big. So she's like, yeah, I'd love to have a Michelle Hebelin watch. I went to Krista, got it for her. So those are literally some of my few positive memories, you know, that I'm like, at least I was able to make her happy without even knowing it's her last days. And it took me about 7 years, Ancela, to accept that my mom is gone. The worst part is there were also rumors that she was assassinated. Like, it wasn't a natural, like, accident. Not that there's a natural accident, but it wasn't an accident. It was planned because of the nature of her work. And that messed up my mind. That messed up my spirit, because for 7 years I kept on hoping, oh, this is just another project, she's gone. Because it's dangerous, they just wanted us to believe she's gone, but she's gonna come back. So I dream about her over and over and over again. And I was in denial. I started being promiscuous. I also just gave up on my career. I fell off. You know, I was that girl, dog, you look shit, at least they're black. And so, you know, I really let go of everything. Because the reality is, I don't think I wanted to be a media practitioner. My mom is the one who wanted to be a journalist. So she was living her life vicariously through me. So without her, now I truly didn't know who I am, you know, and what I want. Yes, I've achieved these little things, but to be quite fair, I never wanted, I never saw myself on TV. I thought I'd definitely do well on radio. And when radio didn't happen, TV happened. It was like, oh, okay, let's do that. But Inhliziyo Yami was always on the radio. So when I gave up on radio, that's when I knew, the girl is down. The girl is down. When I stopped sending demos, stopped trying to connect, and, you know, that's when I knew, I know the chips are down. And the fortunate part with my psyche is that when I'm down, I allow myself to stay down. Stay down for as long as it takes. I used to be laughed at. Kuthi ha bekathuzo phelela phi lo celebrity oy sis wake as long as usitshela ngalo, you know, because you hear these little chatters even in the family kuthi ya bekazenza ngcono ase TV nangu manje ugibela isigcebe, you know, those local taxis, and so yayehla lapha usathenge Woolworths, so thenge Shoprite, you know, because I'm sure there's classism and all those things. So for me, my mom's passing really left me more alone. She had promised me, which when I turned 21, we're gonna open a case against this guy in the family, right? Because then I'm old enough, I can stand up in court and I can stand up for myself. But we never made it to that. So I really then felt alone. And like I said, it was the manner in which she passed on and also the rumors afterwards, you know? Which, no, bambulele. You know, you know, and for a child, that was traumatic. Because even the colleagues now stayed away because they heard the rumors, people are talking. And the only positive from all of this was my little sister. My mom left me with a little sister. She was 4 years old. And I knew when my sister was born that I was meant to be a sister, if you get what I'm saying. I loved my sister. I love my sister. And she truly became my life savior. You know, I've always been a disciplined, ambitious kid. But when that happened, I knew I had to go harder. You know, I knew I have to do it for this one. Now I had a reason to really prove a point, would say, I'm gonna raise this child.
How did you get out of this rut? You've expressed what that rock bottom was, where you gave up on yourself and your career. How did you manage to lift yourself out of that to be able to try again and move on with life?
I started small. I knew which I'm at the bottom. So it's fine, let me stay there. I stayed there for as long as I needed to. I stayed there for a long time, Ansela. And I was okay. Ungagezi, phuza utshwala every day. Ulala nabafana for no reason. Ukipita nje, you understand? But the day I knew it was over, I think I'd fallen and almost like broke my arm. And again, I saw the pain physically, right? And I was so stressed because bokuvuvukile kubed. And I stayed in my bed and I cried and I cried and I cried. And that cry, I knew it's not the arm cry, it's my life cry, you know? And upon that, because my brother and I have always been close, not only with age, but just like relationship, we're best friends. We then decided to open a sandwich business. Hence, I'm saying I started small. We were fortunate enough, because we did grow up in the city in Sunnyside, Pretoria, when it was still clean, not now, when it was still, you know. So we have a sense of security in Sunnyside. Because of we know all the corners, we've got friends everywhere, you know what I mean? And we also were exposed to the number of professionals in the Pretoria CBD. All those buildings is full of people. And in the morning, traffic is intense, primarily because of, you know, the work, the corporate life, you know? So yeah, we started selling sandwiches in the morning, 5 a.m. we're in the streets, coffee, sandwich, 10 rand, 10 rand. By 8 a.m., we're done. We go to restock. We started making a profit, 100 rand. started making 1,000 rand, started making 5,000 rand. We started hiring other people. We started doing lunch now. And gangane, you know, I got back to myself, right? And I've always been a fighter. And although now I no longer identify as Mbokoto, which was part of my get up and do it. You're a woman, you're strong, you know? That was my get up and go. Although now I'm on the polar side of the angsafnu by Mbokoto, I don't want to be strong. The girl is exhausted. I just want soft life. But for me then, I knew to self-motivate. I knew Uguti because of, I mean, I've always been popular from like high school, you know, because of the so many people who actually know me. There's no way I could go where, Matawo, you know, and everybody would say, you haven't changed. You're still the same bubbly, loud, happy Matawo. And I was like, wow, so okay. It was a positive reinforcement to hear from different people. No, you dog, we still love you. Come on. You're still amazing. And yeah, in terms of finances, that's where we started. Ngaleso sikhathi dog, sihlala erumini. It's my sister, my brother, and I. Share a room. Young, I understand. And this is someone who was at top of a game. At 19, I was doing this and that. And now at 25, you know? But I took it slowly. Oh, I quit the weed. I quit the drinking. I knew with every cent matters. Because now go your room, we needed to pay rent. So I think the day I decided to stop weed and stop alcohol was when I knew I'm fighting again. And I'm going to give it one more shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just like subsequent. It was one thing after the other. You know, a domino effect is not always negative. Sometimes it could be a positive domino effect, you know. So it was from the sandwiches, and then I met my mom's ex best friend. It's like, how? In spite of everything you've been through, you are happy. And you know, my brother's Tabang, I'm Matabo. So that's our brand. And we've always been those two kids. Sometimes it's Ngoli late, sometimes, you know what I mean? But for her to see us like that, she's like, no, man, give me your numbers. Kantosebenzela, city of Tshwane, Nested, South Africa. It's like, no, I was like, oh, just data capturing. I got back into the space. I did data capturing for her. Like, oh, okay, cool, no problem. And when that ended, because I mean, it wasn't something permanent. She couldn't give me a job like that. There's a very funny story. I have to give a big shout out to Moses. So I had a friend who actually had a driving school in Sunnyside, Andre. And Andre was the kind of friend that if it was up to him, we could date. But me, I'm seeing my brother, you know? So he's washing his car there. He bought me a black nyana there. And he had taught someone to drive. So the lady he had taught to drive could not drive. Now her boss needed her to drive. So the boss, who is Moses, then comes and calls Andre and says, listen, you taught this lady how to drive. She doesn't know how to drive. I need her to drive. She can't. You come. So I then say, can I come with? All I heard was RTPS and a bike. He wanted to go to RTPS and fetch a bike. I was like, you know? So I got into the car, and because of my personality and my confidence, I thought they were dating. Right? So in the midst of a very light argument, it wasn't even an argument, I then say, guys, I also do relationship counseling. So if you guys need a relationship counselor, I'm here. So this guy turns back and says, why would you say that? And I'm like, how? Relationships, they always need, you know, a third party to assist and mediate. It's like, no, this is my employee. He's not my girlfriend. I'm like, oops. You know? And then he's like, but I like you. What do you do? And I was too embarrassed to tell him, I don't have a job. I was like, oh, I'm in between jobs. You know, I'm a media practitioner. That's where I learned practitioner. I'm a media practitioner. But, you know, I studied this, I did that, and he's like, send me your CV. Yeah, I was send me your CV. I'll see what I can do. I thought he was one of those. That guy pulled through for me. He went through my CV, called me into his office, and he said, if I were to give you 200,000 right now, what would you do? I said, yo, in my language, 200,000. I was like, go think about it. And I came back to him. I said, I'd like to get into microfinancing. And that was a passion project for me. My mom struggled a lot financially. You know, she was on a standard salary, but you've got two teenage children. You're living in the city and, you know? So she never got a chance. I mean, ekhaya, we was to pawn a fridge, see tanga food next month, and pawn the microwave, buy it again in 2 months. You know what I mean? So we'd always had like financial struggles. And for me, to say I want to do impact investing by particularly focusing on the females who are struggling but who are employed, that's when I went to UCT, to the Bertha Center. They do advanced business courses, and I did impact investing course, impact investing as a course, and impact measurement. And came back and I started the microfinancing company. So I was doing loans, essentially. Mashonisa. I was doing loans, and that's when I then started building myself up. You know, and I remember I fought with my then best friend. And she's like, "Ngizongitshela wena, awunani indawo yokuhlala." You know, because I lived in the office. You know, because I figured, listen, if I'm going to be selling money, I don't need to be spending money. Ngithengisa imali, you know? So I stayed in the office. I took my sister to boarding school so that she could be obviously taken care of. And yeah, I stayed in the office, and, you know, one thing came to another. And then I introduced myself to just like going online to search for jobs. I've always been a people's person. So if I need a job, but now I officially said, you know what, let me look for opportunities. Because what happened in that microfinance business is that the consumer has become smarter. By that, I mean, people know ama debit orders go off between 5 and 7 in the morning. So when they get paid at 12, they move their money to another account. Now, if 2 or 3 people do that, it's fine. As a business, we can still, you know, operate. But when 80% of the people you've loaned money to move their monies, and now you can't get that money, now you must run after them, then it really was not lucrative. And our collection, because the National Credit Regulator has a lot of red tape, so you can't go and club and sell and get your money, you know? So yeah, I gave back the monies that we were able to salvage. I'm like, yo, thank you for the opportunity, but I don't want to waste your money further. The business was supposed to be airtight, it was supposed to work, but the consumer has become way smarter, and there's nothing we can do if people move their monies and we can't access it.
Yeah, and I think that's also a very big lesson in investing in a business idea, being able to do enough research to know which businesses will work and which business wouldn't, because I think there's a huge debt crisis in the country. Globally, in general, people are living on debt, and they just can't pay the debt.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big, big lesson to say when you're looking to start a new venture, always do enough due diligence to see how that business can survive. But then you were able to then move from that to founding Media Guru Now, which is now doing so well, and you're managing talent like Hope, like Kossi, and doing so well. There's a number of projects we've done together. How did that business come about?
So going back to, I've always been a people's person. So when COVID happened, there was a project I was working on with Impact Hub. In fact, no, I got a big shout out to Thulane Khatebe. My friend Thulane, whom him and I had started a podcast, I can mention it, it's not competition because we stopped.
Even if it is, plug it in. Plug it in.
Uncultured radio show. Yeah. Check it out on YouTube. Yeah. So we had started that, and I had some money because my sister's trust fund had now matured. So I had some money on me, and I needed to just, like, you know, look for opportunities. But I knew imali iyaphela, right? So my friend Beseka Sentweni, you know, so it's like, yo, DJ, my friends call me DJ. Like, yo, DJ, ongadime 50 thou. I'll help you find a job. I'm like, dude, that sounds like a good plan. You're going to pay me back and I'm going to find a job? Great. So my friend Thulane Khatebe introduced me to Impact Hub and Rosebank. And they were looking for a community manager, right? And the lady who was leaving the position, whom I was her successor, fell in love with me, Miriam Davidovich. She's a lady from Serbia. And she's like, dude, don't take this job. Consult. I'm like, hey? She's like, I want to work with you so that you and I can work. These people, I know how they work. I'll teach you everything about, you know, what they're... So I then approached Impact Hub. I'm like, yo, can you guys please not take me on as an employee, but as a consultant? They were like, you know what? You're right. You know? And that's how I got into the space officially, because my friend introduced me to this company. Now I'm in this company now. The lady, the predecessor, says, no, I want to work with you. And she got me a nice apartment in Roodepoort on top of a mountain. It was subsidized. I mean, I was paying, but it was subsidized. And then we started working together, and I got to understand the global space, right? We did things like the Kanatech, which was a global conference down in Cape Town. We worked on a few local brands also, including Impact Hub. But when COVID happened, she then had to go back to Serbia. And I had to pick myself up. I was supposed to go with Aumputis and said, Aumputisi.
Why are you here and not in Serbia, Miguel?
I started selling my furniture. Everything in the house. I was relocating to Serbia. Pillow talk. The husband said, no. We're not here too much. It's okay that you were here, you know? But now you want to take this whole lady and uproot her from the whole of Africa and take her to the west of Europe. No, my lady. So the husband, last minute, said, no, it's not happening. She's going to stay in the country. She'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Now I find myself back to zero again. I've sold my furniture. And I wasn't selling it because I needed the money. I was just selling it. You know what I mean? I stayed in South Africa. All I had left was I still had the car and the bed. My brother gets sick. He's in Limpopo with his girlfriend. So now I leave and I go to my brother. And I didn't know this, but my business partner had children in 3 consecutive years. And I didn't know that if you do that, you can go nuts all. Yeah. So yes, it's good uglamisa early, but you can't have one pregnancy after another after another.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it messes up. So wagula ugela zanga sapatale rent. Now I'm not getting my salary because we don't have gigs, it's COVID. And went to my brother for 2 weeks. When I came back, I was evicted. Try to go to the police, try to do this. Born and nobody could help me. I took whatever I could, put it in the car, went back to Springs. My cousin who had just passed away, she's like, no, come stay with me. She's got a family, she's got a big house. She's like, come stay with me, you'll pick yourself up. That's when I started doing online courses. Because remember with COVID, kids were now online. So I hustled. I did online courses for kids. And before I knew it, Black Motion, I'm sure you know Black Motion. So I had done work with them in the past, and their road manager, big up to Nikki. Nikki then calls me, and you know when it's time, Ansela. So I could come to you and ask for a job, you can't help me. But I'm convinced you can because you're so connected. And then here's Nikki, the person I didn't ask. is like, yo, bro, there's a new guy who's starting a record company. They're looking for PR. Are you up for it? I'm like, dude, the timing is impeccable. For sure, you know? And I go for the interview. Get to the interview, this guy says to me, listen, the offer I had for you is an embarrassment. Let me go back and review. Because I mean, I'm not shy, I'm not a dog. I'm not a dog. No, it's an embarrassment. I can't even give you that offer. Comes back to me the next day and says, you know what, how much do you want me to pay you? I'm like, that's where I want it. I'm like, I am 34. I'll be happy with 34 thou. It's like, okay, approved. 34 thou. I'm like, wait a minute. John! I send an email and it's, Neslungu genya shy ya dog. I slungu genya shy. I'm like, due to the induced nature of this appointment, I need to obviously, because they knew I had already kind of started my agency. So I need to obviously leave my existing clients on a good note. And some of them had paid in advance. So I'm like, yo, I need an advance of 50K so I can pay off my clients. I'm like, you know what I mean? And looking back, I got that job. I did PR for them. I mean, now the confidence is coming back. You know, I'm calling my connects. But you would not probably know this. But in the industry, we step on each other's toes a lot. Because some people have bad behavior. And when you call them out, they blackball you and. But now I needed favors from my peers. With, yo, real goboza. I need to, you know, I called my people at Urban Brew. They're like, don't worry, we got you. They came and covered. Called journalists. I'm like, yo, it's me. You know, my event was successful, right? The launch, rather, of the record company. And that's then how I met Hope and Tlochi. Because Hope and Tlochi were looking for a home, right? Because, I mean, their brand was already kind of picking up momentum. But also because they're kids and because they don't have so much knowledge. So they came to the record company to record a few songs and so forth. And that's when we formed a relationship. So when the demise of the record company happened, because it was badly managed and, yeah. It's a long story. It was badly managed. Within 6 months, it went down. And I had formed a bond with the twins, Hope and Tlochi. And they're like, yo, mama, can you manage us? I was like, you know what? Yes, I'll do it. We had just done an MTN campaign. I'd never done a campaign before in Sela, ever. But I nailed it. Client immediately approved, post. You know, and without knowing it, good. Sometimes clients will be difficult and say, nah, we don't like that concept. Nah, we don't like that. Everything I did, they're like, approve. I just took a travel bag, took a yellow spray paint. How was it? You know, it was just a simple concept, like for social media campaign. And that's when I knew I'm in the right space. Started doing more social media campaigns, you know, started doing more brand work. Started touching base with those, you know, hey, it's me. You know, the Sibu Mabenas of this world. She also just, like, inspired me a lot. You know, Farah Fortune, Hypress, Mel. You know, those are the people I then reached out to say, yo, I want to be in your space. Can you assist me? She's actually one of the ladies who's like, yo, brah, you know everybody and everybody knows you. And that's all you need to be a great PR practitioner. So run with it. You are the perfect PR person. So Media Guru 247 was actually a name I came up with when I was 13. Remember I told you I felt grade 8, ne? So when I felt grade 8, I knew I had to prove a point to my mom. Mama, I'm not stupid. I'm smart. It's just that Linda was le young vurvai, you know? And I then did a whole business plan for my mom. this is my, you know, production house. That's what I called it. I wanted to have a production house so I can shoot this and do that and do that. Everything you're doing actually was in my business plan. Stop stealing my notes. So, yeah, essentially that's then how God showed up. And you know, when God shows up, he shows off, you know?
All the time.
And with the success of working with the house of H&H, then I got the likes of Kosi. Who on earth lands a Kosi, bruh? Who lands a Kosi?
Yeah. And I think that's also a testament to, if you've gone through so much in your life, there comes a point where you go through a journey of healing and understanding. Because imagine had all of those people landed on your lap when you hadn't dealt with your with anger issues, with trauma, with the pain, you'd have lost them, and you could have even lost your reputation in the industry. So sometimes the things that you go through and that period of waiting is preparing you for what God has in store for you. So he knew that you are going to start this company that's going to thrive. And the idea was given to you when you were even young and in high school. But then it just needed you to be ready for it to be able to run it properly. So what do you think is making the company successful today?
Right now, what I can attribute the success of Media Guru is consistency. We've been consistent, and I always teach all my talents that there's no better client than a return client, because it means you did a good job, you know, or a referral. And the past 24 months, we've been working on with the return clients and referrals. And that has made us who we are. As an agency, I'm definitely still looking to, you know, scale up and truly employ more people and, you know, but in terms of the work we've done so far, it's the consistency. We stay on top of our game. If I tell you, I mean, when we made this appointment for this chat, I said, oh, no, it's fine. I'll have time to goopy. Where did I groom Muzola 7? Look at this nail. Look at this nail. I don't even have time to self-groom, you know? So in essence, it's truly just being hungry enough. What makes us good is we are not into our past achievements. I always tell my talent, Guti, you are not even as good as your last performance. You're not good anymore. Start afresh and finding your niche. I think it's important that you find your niche. Don't say yes to every opportunity just because it's an opportunity. Because some opportunities are not necessarily from God. They are there to distract you out of the path that God has set out for you. So being able to, like you said, do diligence. And the ability to have foresight and a vision. So that could work, that could not work. And truly speaking, saving money. We save money all the time. We have not spent monies we've made from last year. Mina velege, it's only today that I tried to look cute for you. But I'm a boy velo ngo bratavo, you know. I don't stress about all these things, expensive clothes, ing. So that also motivates us, because I'm trying to buy a house. I'm trying to buy this. So we are truly just ambitious on that level. And I've been very fortunate. All of the talent that I manage, dikopwerk. Because a lot of people really do say managing artists is tough because they're divas and so forth. I've been so blessed. I think God said, I'm Danamo Zwile, man. Let me bless you.
It's your time to shine.
Yeah, it's a soft life, you know? Yeah. So in essence, yeah, consistency. I think just also staying hungry. You know, you must eat, but leave space for dessert. You know, so that's where we are. We're eating, but we're still leaving space because we know there's more to be done.
Yeah.
And the ability to truly make authentic connections. a lot of people are quite fictitious in this industry. Everything is at face value. People don't really care for you. People don't even pray for each other. You know what I mean? And that for me has become my brand consciously. I want people to know that I'm synonymous with joy and, you know, sisterhood and, you know, embracing other women. Because I'm a daughter, I'm a mega.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really, really beautiful. And I think your journey to be able to do what you are doing now, despite everything you have been through, is really a blueprint to say it's possible. Things can happen in life and happen to you, but you can turn that around only if you want to turn that around. So when we finish off this podcast, we like to play what we call Fast Five. Okay. So it's five questions that I ask you that you need to answer in one sentence or a phrase, or even better, one word. They go really quickly. Are you ready?
Gotcha. Okay. All right, cool.
So question one, given all that you've been through in your life and in your journey, what are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of my empathetic, compassionate ways. Yeah. I'm still able to be empathetic. I didn't let life harden my heart.
Yeah. And if you were to talk to 9-year-old Matabo, who was going through all of that trauma, what would you say to her?
I can't answer that. Oh, Matabo, the 9-year-old. Hi, Ankalisa, when Ansela. Oof. I'll just give that girl a hug and a meal, man. And just a bed and a sense of safety. I think that girl just needed to be safe. Yeah, just give her a bath, a meal and a blanket, just so she could feel safe.
Yeah. And if your mom were here, what do you think you would be the first thing you would say to her?
I would have wondered, young Kanyisa, man, you talk. Wow, if my mom were here, I'd say, Mom, I've been waiting. I knew you were not dead. I think that's what I'd say. I'm like, I knew it when I was paid. Mama, when I got Mama, I got. Yeah, I think I just celebrate the fact that I've always known I'll see her again, because that's what kept me going. And when I was in that denial, because I was in denial for 7 years, that's what also kept me going. With no Zobuya, man. She's just a way in a work. So I think I'd say I knew it. I knew it, yeah.
And my prayer is that, you know, you and your dad find a way back to each other.
We're not doing that.
I think God can create miracles and allow such opportunities to happen. And if that were to happen and he says, listen, I know I've been wrong and I really want us to talk and try again from an honest space, what would the first thing you say to him be?
Sorry, I'm not ready. I don't want that. I've given him so many chances. I gave my dad so many chances to prove to me that he cares, that he loves me. So right now, this Matabo, nah.
Nothing.
I angaga feel up who grade 9 lawyer. I mean, I'm go grade 2.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk to the Matawa that's sitting with me right now.
Yeah.
What is it after this conversation and all of this reflection that we've done that you want to say to yourself?
Wow. See, now that I love. What I would say to myself right now.
Yeah. Say is, actually say it to yourself right
well
now.
Well done, Matabo. Yeah. I'm proud of you, Matabo. Your resilience was not in vain. The pains, the traumas, the disregard, the rejection was not in vain. And you have proven to yourself that you're worth it. And self-mastery for me has always been a thing. I've been attracted to that for a while. And I'd be happy to say you've mastered yourself. Yeah. And what is it? What the world says, I have mastered Mathabo.
Yeah.
I know how to take care of Mathabo. I know what Mathabo needs. So congrats, sis Mathabo.
Yeah. And you know, from me, I also run a PR company. I see how you're running your business. So for every business person who's ever had the privilege to work with you, I'll say this on their behalf. You are incredible. You are such a light to work with. You answer the phone. You're so bubbly and so open and so driven. I see how much you want to see your talent win. And I know that what you're building is going to grow. And every single thing you've been through was not in vain. I know it was painful. I know it was hard. I know that there were other ways in which God could have done it and blessed your life. But for some reason, he chose for it to be this way. And let me tell you, that's your superpower, because that's your story that nobody can ever take from you. And I see you every day use that to fuel you to build not just yourself. And with everything you've been through, something I find so immaculate about you is that you're not building for yourself. Every time we talk, it's, oh, my talent. Oh, Ansela, Kosi this, Kahi this, Hope this. Oh, every time. And I've never heard, oh, Ansela, me. It's that's always why. For you being in service. And that's such a beautiful thing. The things that happened to you have not taken away who you are. You have still built and became somebody who is so compassionate and has a lot of empathy. So thank you for being in service of others. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being in service to yourself. And I pray that this phase of your life, as you're about to get to 40, may life begin, as they say, life begins at 40. And may it be more bright and filled with sunshine and roses and travel and money and
laughter. And a baby!
And a baby! And it can happen! And a baby! And may that happen for you.
Thank you. Keep shining.
Absolutely love you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. When you said you wanted to chat to me about my story, I said, I don't know if she's ready for all of this. It's raw, it's disgusting, it's painful, but if she can hear me out long enough, she'll know ukuthi God never lets down abantwana bakhe. Unkulunkulu uthembekile and uthembisile ukuthi I'll be there.
Yeah.
Stay faithful.
Yeah.
A lot of people want to take the glory for themselves. Me, I always say the glory goes to God.
It's not for us.
Unsibilekile in my mother's womb. And that for me is where the story started. And there's no way I could have done everything out of my beauty, out of my... I mean, this girl doesn't even have a diploma. Do you get what I'm saying? It can only be God.
It can only be God. And that's it for our conversation with the amazing, talented Mathabo Mbele. If you're an artist and you know that you are incredible, I promise you, you want a woman like this in your corner. She's the founder of Media Guru, who's doing exceptional work in the industry. Thank you so very much for watching. And a big shout out to our studio partner. Listen, this place where we film from is incredibly beautiful. Please come check it out. Check out the details on your screen right now. And if you want to get a discount when you book the space, please look at the details on the screen. Until next time.